Hi Calvin, please continue. We just had to
That's
reconnect
okay.
because of the crackdown of the sound.
Yeah, not a problem. In illustration 2614, what we're showing is that whether you're looking at a charged field, equilateral geometry, or a photon field, which radiates bilaterally from its source, which is a 2 pi field or a 2 boson field, over time, as these fields, the photon fields or the 2 boson fields, expands linearly along its linear momentum, the geometry of the field, the diamond-shaped geometry of the field itself and the photons within it, remains constant. But what changes is, as over time the field expands out, the energy and the wavelength of those photons, or the electric and magnetic fields within the EM wave, drops off proportional to the square of the distance. This creates the inverse squared number law. It's apparent. You see it in Coulomb's law. You see it in Newton's law of gravitation. It's a result of the geometry of bosons and photons, or bosons within photons that are within electromagnetic fields. Normally, you'll see drawings like at the top right-hand corner, where the squared number is represented by a square. Tetrionics shows us that the squared numbers are not squared geometries, they're equilateral geometries. And accordingly, whether you're measuring the energy level, you'll get a energy plot as per the left-hand bottom corner, which gets weaker as it radiates from the source point. So it's strongest closest to the source, but weakest further from it. Or if you plot the just keep the geometries constant and expand it out, the bottom right hand illustration gives you a mapping of the positive and negative and north and south EM fields of the photons within an expanding EM wave. So they produce these two patterns. It depends entirely on how you measure the photons within the EM field as to which pattern is important and which pattern is measured. But it's an inverse squared law. In 2615, we simply relate frequency and wavelength to the velocity of light and the geometry of the charges, or the quanta, that make up any EM field. As we said before, kinetic energies of motion are stored in an equilateral EM field. It is comprised of bosons and photons, depending on how you measure it. But in both cases, the number of quanta by their physical wavelength will give you a precise or a deterministic velocity, which is related geometrically to the energy of the field. So frequency by wavelength gives you the energy of the field, the number of quanta. The number of quanta determines the wavelength within the field. Whether it's bosons or photons you're measuring makes no difference. The only difference is to be careful again not to mix H nu for bosons with HF for photons. But in this case, we're just talking the energy of a chem field. So it has a square root linear momentum. So you can equate energy to momentum squared. And we can now, through the geometry, finally unify Newton, Leibniz, Maxwell, Planck, Einstein, and de Broglie, all in one geometric picture of mass, energy, momenta. And we just in summary of what's on there, we can show that E equals mv, which is the square root linear momentum of a system. That's what Newton measured, whereas Leibniz referred to E equals mv squared, which is the scalar energies, E, the square of Newton's linear momentum. The velocity is the inverse of the square root of the electric permittivity by the magnetic permeability. Big long word, that's how Maxwell expressed it. It's just saying that the cross product of the electric and the magnetic fields will create a specific, well, the energy of those two fields will create a specific velocity. We know that velocity is geometrically related to the energy of the field. V squared is the number of quanta, produces a velocity V in all states, which is why the square root is related to the energy by the square. Planck's quanta we've now shown to be H nu. So it's the number of equilateral quanta within the field, whereas Einstein's HF is the number of 2 pi quanta in the field. De Broglie's relationship is simply Planck's quanta, or Planck's constant, sorry, divided by the linear momentum, the square root, linear momentum of the scalar field. And that simply saying that as the energy increases, or for set energy of the field, there will be a specific wavelength that's related to the linear momentum. So another way of saying that would be to say that physically in this drawing above, the pink arrow, the linear momentum, can be redrawn, as I do in tetrionics later on, as a blue arrow to represent the wavelength. So the linear momentum is directly proportional to the wavelength, and they're all determined by the number of quanta in any field of energy. Of course, Planck's constant, we know, has units of kilograms mass, kilograms meters, kilograms meters squared per second, which is another way of saying mass, quantized angular momentum, where square meters per second is simply a equilateral geometry. Square meters per second is the spatial coordinate c squared. So kilograms square meters per second is simply the illustration that we see there, an interpretation of energy per second, or Planck's constant. Looking closer at the quantized angular momentum of the field, we can see that c squared divided by the quantized angular momentum, or the number of the angular, the equilateral triangles, will give us a frequency. This goes deeper than what even physics has gone at present. This relationship of c squared divided by omega is not presently known. It's a geometric, geometrically derived relationship, and you can also derive a similar relationship for wavelengths, as shown there, where omega, the equilateral triangle, is divided by c. And that's literally calculating this blue arrow, or the it's not shown, shown as a pink arrow, but it's literally the equivalent. They're equivalent to each other. So the wavelength is the same, is the physical measurement of the length of that linear momentum that's drawn there. If you cross product or multiply frequency by wavelength, c squared over omega by omega over c, you end up with c, which is just another velocity. It's the velocity of light. So here we have a geometric equation that gives us the relationship of velocity for frequency wavelength of quanta within a chem field. And particularly in this case, we're talking about Planck quanta, but by multiplying the answer by 2, you have the answer for how many photons make up that field. 2616 then expands on that relationship. As we see there, we can see it's now expressed as c as a velocity of light in the a vacuum, and we can see the SI units for wavelength, frequency, and wave numbers, which is the inverse of wavelength. If you look at the SI units for wavelength, it's meters. For wave numbers, it's per meter. And for frequency, it's quanta per second. Expanding them out from what we have there in the geometric formulation for the relationship of velocity equaling frequency by wavelength, you can see the SI units of frequency and velocity, and you can see how they all cancel out using omega, which is the equilateral geometry, square meters per second for wavelength, by seconds per meter, which is algebraically rearranging what's in the square brackets. Omega divided by C, when you take square meters per second by seconds per meter, you end up with meters. Equivalently, looking at frequency, C squared divided by omega, you go square meters per second by seconds per square meter, you get per second. And for wave numbers, of course, it's the inverse of the wavelengths. So we have meters per second by seconds per square meter gives us per meter. So now we have the full geometric derivation and mathematical formulation for the wavelength, frequency, and wave number of photons. And this applies also to EM waves. So we use these formulas. You can use them as the formula is there now mathematically, or what I tend to do is just use the geometry. We know that an equilateral geometry is omega. We know what C squared is as a spatial unit. You can see all this formulation, all the complex mathematical notation is just a representation of photons in an EM wave. And that an EM wave, even though it's a wave of energy, because of geometry, can be also expressed as a kinetic energy wave, where mv squared equals h nu squared. So we have a direct one-on-one relationship between the number of quanta in a wave and the velocity that it can accelerate any given mass matter to. So what this is showing is that the diamond-shaped photons within diamond-shaped EM waves are the basis of electrical acceleration or electricity. Photons are now shown to be, if you like, the quanta of electromagnetic fields that will accelerate matter proportional to the mass energy in the matter. So this is the raw form of electricity seen here as an EM wave, which is of course made up of quanta. All the properties, as we've discussed via Euler's formulation, of electric and magnetic fields being 90 degrees out of phase with each other, and the positive and negative charges being 180 degrees out of phase, are all inherent in the geometry, as is the frequency wavelength relationship of the photons with respect to the velocity that can be created by the energy content of that wave. So all these properties of electrical power, of acceleration, of kinetic energy, linear momentum, angular momentum, quantized angular momentum, correct me, are all inherent in the geometry of photons. 2617 just highlights the frequency component, where we take the same EM wave and we see that it's comprised of 64 photons or 128 bosons. Remember, of course, that there's two bosons to every photon. So to measure the photons, we measure an EM wave longitudinally. To measure the bosons, we measure it transversely. And we see that frequency, which is c squared divided by the number of triangles or the quantized angular momentum, is shown there as 64 triangles or dual triangles, correct? Because it's the frequency we're relating to. And with a bit of manipulation and looking back at other work, you can see that c squared on omega is actually the inverse of omega on c squared. And if you remember back to the early work in tetrionics, omega divided by c squared, equilateral geometry per c squared is charge. So now we can show geometrically in physics that frequency is the inverse of charge, just as wave numbers are the inverse of wavelengths. So again, this charge frequency, the inverse frequency being the inverse of charge, unknown until we have the geometry of quantized angular momentum. And that's what tetrionics does for physics that mathematics alone cannot do, because the mathematics alone cannot show the relationship of omega to the equilateral geometry or quantized angular momentum as an equilateral geometry. It fails in that respect. It can't be derived from the mathematics, because the mathematics does not have that understanding in it. It is only through the geometry that you can develop that relationship. So you have to discover tetrionics and the relationship of squared numbers to equilateral geometries in order to get this insight into photons and frequency. Frequency, the relationship of photon frequency to electromagnetic charge, which is what that was showing. 2618 relates wave, shows what wavelength is. Again, as we expressed it, it's omega divided by c, which is the linear momentum component. Here we physically map the linear momentum. It's the square root of the 2 pi geometric field, and the number of triangle per c simply just gives us the equilateral geometries per c. So we end up with a physical wave length, and it's more appropriate to stick to the word wave length, because relativity usurped this function, the measurement of a wavelength, and applied it to matter when it only applies to mass energy. So that as the energy content increases, or the velocity of the particle of the field increases, the particle associated with it, the wavelength of the matter does not change. The wavelength of the chem field, or the photons, bosons within the chem field, changes. So I suppose the better, clearer way to say that is that mass energy is Lorentz contracted, matter is not. And 2619, again, just inverts that relationship to omega divided by c to give us wave numbers, or the number of Planck quanta along the linear momentum. It's just a count of how many photons for a given distance. That's why it has the units it has. It's often very confusing to explain and to try and convey to students first looking at physics. But wave numbers are extremely important, because Rydberg's formula for spectral lines deals with wave numbers. It calculates the wave numbers, not the wavelengths of photons, and not the frequency. So you have to understand what a wave number is physically in the geometry in order to understand what's being calculated for in Rydberg's number, so that we can geometrically explain how spectral lines are created. So 2620 summarizes all these relationships that we've talked about finally. wavelength, frequency, wave number, quanta, how they're all related to each other using this new geometric relationship for all four. And you can see that the wavelength is omega over C. The wave number is C over omega. It's the inverse. Frequency is C squared divided by omega. Charge is the inverse, or omega divided by C squared, which was unknown until tetrionics. We can now use this as a geometric formulation for EM waves, which is what we'll be discussing next. But that omega, which is quantized angular momentum, and the relationship of C and C squared will give us everything we need to know in order to geometrically represent kinetic energy, EM waves, bosons, photons, the phase relationships of electric to magnetic, the geometric reason for changing electromagnetic fields in EM waves and photons, and their kinetic energy relationship to mass matter particles in motion. So all of that that we've just discussed and gone through can all be summarized in that one illustration, and including the linear momentum. I didn't mention it. All of those properties are summarized in that illustration, as well as the important one that I keep stressing, and that is that two Planck quanta equals a photon, HF. It's extremely important to bear that in mind, because if you don't, the mathematics will in fact give you wrong answers. And in fact, in spectral lines, we'll see that the frequencies often calculated for waves of light are in fact the number of bosons, not the number of photons. We can then apply these in 2801 to give us a clear, concise picture of photons within chem fields, or mass energy momenta within fields of motion. And you can see here an electron with a mass matter topology is surrounded by an associated chem field. When a force is applied, the photon has the mass energies of the applied force stored in this chem field, which has a kinetic component, or a longitudinal photonic kinetic component, and a transverse boson magnetic component. Again, whether you measure bosons or photons comes down to how you measure the fields. In most cases, you're looking at the photon coming towards you, so you're measuring the photonic fields, which is why this is color-coded in the central picture by photons. And that highlights the linear momentum of the field. And it also highlights its relationship to the kinetic energy of the field. You can see on either side, left and right, the bosons that make up the energy levels of that field, and it simply reflects as forces applied, bosons are added to give us squared numbers. And those bosons, those squared energy fields, can be measured longitudinally as photons of energy as well, because they have a momenta component in addition to the charged energy. But if you want to accelerate a particle, you simply add transverse bosons, and it creates a longitudinal or a linear acceleration, because the square root is the linear component of the chem field. And of course, all these fields, as you can see there quite clearly, as you add energy or decrease energy, the physical wavelength of the Planck quanta is changed accordingly. So the energy can be said to be Lorentz contracted. And of course, the distribution in all cases for every single field there is a normal distribution. It goes from a central mean value of n, and the sigma values are n minus a half all the way out in both directions till you reach a zero value. So it's a normal distribution of bosons within the fields, or again, you could measure it as photons within the field. In 2801, we now finally summarize all that we know about photons. Just as a quick review, we see at the top of the picture that photons have a Evans photomagneton, that is, they are quantum bar magnets in motion with a north and a south pole, depending on their charge orientation and the direction of motion. We can see at the to the left of that picture, we can see that photons can be their own antiparticle, plus and minus, or minus and plus field quanta make up a photon. Photons can then combine in two pi geometries to give us even pi EM waves, and their total energy momenta contributes to the energy momenta of the field, or the EM field, I should say. We can see at the bottom left-hand side that if a photon interacts with an electron, whether it's in motion or not, all the energy of the photon will be added to the chem field. The mass topology of the electron remains the same, but the energy of the photon is added to the chem field, and the velocity of the electron changes accordingly. You can see to the right of that, at the bottom of the page, that you can even add or have two photons of sufficient energy collide with each other, because they are their own antiparticles. They will, all their energies of mass energy will go into either creating a larger EM wave, or if there's sufficient energies, they can actually create equal but opposite matter topologies, mass matter. So the mass, some of the mass energy of the photons goes into making an electron and a positron, and the remainder of the mass energy goes into the chem fields, which then creates the particles moving in opposite, well, not opposite, it depends on the interaction angles, but in differing directions. But the number of quanta within the number of photons, I should say, within the EM waves must add up to the number of quanta required to both make the positive and negative particles and add energies of motion. Finally, at the top right-hand corner, you can see an example where a large EM wave under certain circumstances can be split into two smaller EM waves, or even two photons of energy. And we do this commonly in laser experiments with beam splitters, etc. But when it splits, there's obviously, because photons are mass energy momenta quanta, the conservation of mass energy momenta applies. So whatever mass energy momenta was in the original EM wave, the two resultant or split beams must sum up to the original wave. There's conservation of mass energy momenta geometries, if you like, applies. But conservation of topology is not necessarily conservative. So with the impact, with the collision of two photons, you don't necessarily produce particles of mass matter, electrons, positrons, etc. But where you do, the conservation of mass energy still applies. So you must have two particles of opposite charge created, because you have to balance out all the charges that existed before the collision with those that exist after the collision, in whatever form they take. finally, at the end of the discussions of photons, I'll just point out one final thing that I've continually spoken about, and that is that NHV equals HF. That is the number of Planck quanta that makes up the energy momenta of a photon is equal to the frequency of photons in the EM wave. That is to say, the number of odd particles will always sum to be a measure of the even numbers, even if it's a half wavelength, which may be the case. But that relationship is true mathematically. It is more correct, and I'll just read out what's stated there, mathematically directly relating the number of Planck quanta, H nu, NH nu, with photon frequencies HF, and the frequent interchanging of one value for the other in physics is a source of considerable confusion in quantum mechanics. And by that I'm saying you'll often see equations where H nu equals E equals HF. That is an incorrect mathematical statement. It is only correct if you have NH nu as stated at the top, or if you state 2H nu equals HF. That is correct. But simply saying Planck quanta and Planck frequencies equals each other is equivalent to saying odds equals evens, or worse still, 1 equals 2. Mathematically, it cannot be done. It is incorrect. Geometrically, it's incorrect. This is why I say that tetrionics geometry is the grammar of mathematics in physics. Because until you see the geometry of bosons and photons, you could easily accept that incorrect mathematical formulation as being true. We can also now show that whereas Isaac Newton stated that they were photons were particles or corpuscles of energy momenta of light, they are not particles. They are indeed waves, as Thomas Young expressed, but they are not concentric circles of equipotential as drawn by Young in his description and explanation of wave patterns and interference. The concentric circles of equipotential positive or negative fields or magnetic fields is simply derived from the geometry of photons, as we saw back in the Euler formulation, where equilateral geometries of the same field strength can be joined using circles to indicate the strength of positive and negative fields in an alternating fashion in an EM wave. But there are no concentric circles or semicircles to be found. What is to be found, if you could catch up and look at a photon of light, is the geometry that's right beside the picture of Einstein. It will be one of those two geometries, and that's HF, or two Planck quanta. They're distinct from bosons because of their geometry and their energy content, and the geometry also creates different alternating electric and magnetic fields as they propagate or as detectors move with respect to them, which is where relativity came into the picture. But lacking the geometry, relativity couldn't explain what was really happening. So that'll probably summarize most of the information for photons in what we've discussed so far. We've really stressed the differentiation between photons and bosons, in so much as their geometry and the fact that they are both mass energy geometries. They're the invisible quanta that make up all the fields of force all the magnetic fields, the electric fields, the attraction and repulsion of particles to each other, the storage of the energies of force when force is applied to a particle. It's all stored in either bosons or photons, and depending how we measure these fields, we are either measuring bosons or photons. But now that we have the geometry, we can differentiate between even those two forms of mass energy, just like we do between mass and matter. And it's all done on a geometric basis, so we don't even have to even look at the mathematics if we don't want. We can look, as we would teach it to children, as a geometric relationship, not a mathematical relationship. The mathematics comes from the geometry.
Thank you so much, Kelvin.
You're
welcome.
I can
try to summarize it all, but then, as you said, picture 26.01 basically does it all. But most impressive, I have to look back at the picture where you unify all of the formulations of the notations for wavelength and wave number. It is quite a feat to see it all come together. Where before we already talked about the way tetrionics actually shows the cosmic constants, essentially from first principles out of geometry. Likewise, that picture of bringing together wave number, wavelength, frequency, and so on, it is one of those piazzas where all the roads of thought of tetrionics come together and show why it is so crucial, why it is so fundamental, why it is that paradigm shift as a result of which you can see the simplification of many things which were complex by the previous formulations and perspectives. I will try to summarize what you said about photons. In that way, the starting point of the story was that you assumed that the photon would be a particle and could be expressed as a tetrahedron. In fact, that is how I found your work, because I was exploring that same idea. And then you discovered that it was not possible to see the photon as a tetrahedron in three dimensions, for the simple reason that it doesn't fulfill the criteria. The properties don't fit.
Yes.
You've already described that is because of the difference between matter and mass. And then you realize that the photon was, in fact, a coupling of two bosons. As a result, the photon is, in my terminology, the carrier wave of the electromagnetic field. The spreading out of the energy of the photon actually defines the speed of light. so it is not that the photon travels at the speed of light, which you already said, that's a kind of circuitous formulation. But that the photon, in its spreading out of the energy, is the carrier wave of the electromagnetic field. And you've already explained a lot of the principles by which the electromagnetic field can then be understood, which will then be a separate discussion. but it's really fundamental, really wonderful to see how you brought all of these ideas together, of helping to understand that, first of all, the photon is not a particle. Secondly, the photon is not a fundamental particle, because the more fundamental particle is that of the Planck quantum or the boson, but that once you understand that two bosons connected form a photon, then a lot falls in place, and you can see how the transverse and longitudinal measurement come in play, how the normal distribution can be found. But of course, it is very pivotal and quite a discovery on your part to see that It is the coupling between two bosons that creates the photon. It is not self-evident. Again, I try to point out these turning points where people trying to follow your line of thought need to go at the right angle turn to get off the main road into this new turn of road to go into this new landscape of tetrionics. And it is that coupling of two bosons into a photon which have then led to this whole expose which you've just walked us through in detail. And alas, we needed to reconnect in the middle of that because of the deterioration of the quality of the sound. But I'm always glad that you're immediately capable of reconnecting to the story and continuing with the tale. And again, thank you so much for bringing together this fundamental start on going into the understanding of how in tetrionics the photon plays this important role. I suggest that we conclude this part of the recording of this first part of the exploration of the photon in tetrionics. The next part will then be the electromagnetic field. And as always, I'd like to ask you to round it off in whichever way you prefer to do.
You've summarized it pretty well, Otto. I mean, like, of course, I tend to forget the learning curve that I've been on as I've delved into these things. So this is where the discussions are good, because they refresh and allow me to point out things that have grown over time. And photons are something that probably even merits another discussion on that topic, particularly how physics is so full of coincidences. I mean, like, as we've discussed, the energy of the photon field is E equals MV squared, which in the case of a photon propagates at C, so E equals MC squared. Mathematically, that generalization's hidden. But it's there, but it's not until you do these geometric drawings that you begin to see these relationships, and the relationship of charge to frequency and photons to bosons and all these other things popping up, contractions due to velocity. But at the end of the day, the photons, just as important as the bosons are. It's a differing geometry, but they both hold equal charge, and photons both hold different positions of importance in physics. And what we've been lacking is this geometry, the omega, is what's been missing now that we have it, because of the geometry. The equilateral geometry equals omega. We can see the connection between bosons and photons. We can see their geometry for the first time, and the relationships between electric and magnetic fields and the math that they create. Because up till now, as I keep saying, we've been looking at the complex math and unable to decipher the simple geometry underneath it all that underpins it. Now that we've had that breakthrough in geometric terms, this is where the excitement begins, because we can start playing around, just as we did with equilateral quanta. We can play around with diamond-shaped quanta in the EM fields that we'll discuss next, and we'll see all the things that they can create. Just as charge creates mass and matter, these photons create a huge number of different EM fields.
Wonderful. I look forward to the continuation of this, and I'll just conclude and end this recording for now. As usual, okay. I'll come back to you for a brief after talk. Thank you, Kevin.
No problems.
Great work.
Thank you.